the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, you're listening to Earth First Radio.
We're cutting chainsaws, killing the trees, something, everything that lives in peace. Our animal friends are on the run, but there's nowhere to go when the job is done. How can we stand by while this all takes place? We've got to stop this inhuman race.
And welcome to Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis. Every week I bring you no compromise news, views, poetry, and music for activists on the front lines of the environmental movement. In the news, you'll hear about the folks who are killing the planet and the folks who have detailed information about saving what's left. They all have names, addresses, telephone numbers, fax numbers, email, and web addresses, so please go get a pencil or a pen. And let me change the EQ here so I sound more like Uncle Dennis. And get ready to write down some of this information, because this isn't couch potato radio. This is activist radio, and you really can make a difference by writing letters, sending faxes, making phone calls, or generally making yourself heard when you aren't out in the woods, up in a tripod or a tree sit, or locked down at a road blockade. These have got to be the world's worst headsets, but, well, anyway, they're the ones we've got here at Free Radio. If you have information, announcements, comments about Earth First Radio, please keep your pencil handy and listen for the contact addresses and information later on in the show. Let's start out with some announcements. Here's an important announcement for Earth First Radio listeners. First of all, was that unfortunately, last week's show, which I thought was being recorded, in fact was not being recorded due to our wonderfully reliable equipment here at Free Radio Santa Cruz. Unfortunately, that show was missed anyway. For those of you who want something to listen to, you can always go to radioforall.web.net, where that last week's show isn't, and check out the Ward Churchill tape. That's 2 hours and 25 minutes of a talk by Ward Churchill, AIM leader and researcher on the FBI, so check that one out. And the other announcement about the Earth First Radio show is that beginning tonight we are changing to a one-hour format. That means that there won't be two separate shows recorded tonight. There'll only be one one-hour show recorded. And the beauty of this is we get a few extra minutes for news and music. And so stay tuned for that. The reason for this is that we're making Earth First Radio a little bit more friendly for radio stations out there to rebroadcast Earth First Radio. So I hope you like the change. If you have any comments about our programming or this change in format, why don't you give a call to or send an email to cruzef@cruzio.com and put Earth First Radio in the subject line, and Uncle Dennis will figure it out. Here's some more announcements. The Forest Service decisions are now available on the Internet in an effort to force federal agencies such as the Forest Service to make their decisions accessible to the public. The Wyoming Outdoor Council, with the aid of Earth Law, sued in federal court to enforce the Electronic Freedom of Information Act. It was passed in 1996, but the Forest Service just recently started complying with the law. You know how the Forest Service is. We'll comply with the law when they damn well feel like it. So, starting June 30th, they finally gave in, and they're doing it. Here is the web page, www.fs.fed.us/im/FOIA/opinions/. Once again, the Forest Service Electronic Reading Room is at www.fs.fed.us/im/FOIA/opinions/. And the Bureau of Land Management likewise has an electronic reading room. They are at www.blm.gov.nhp.efoia. Once again, that's www.blm.gov.nhp.efoia. And demonstrations coming up here in the future. The recreational fee demonstration protest day is August 14th as part of Wild Wilderness's Wild and Free in the 21st Century campaign. Saturday, August 14th is planned as a national day of action and protest against the recreation fee demonstration program. If you don't know what that is a program whereby the Forest Service is going to charge you to walk in the woods. It's already in place on a voluntary basis in several national forests around the U.S., and it's basically a bad deal. It's being pushed by some of the outdoor recreation people because they're trying to get out from under a recreation excise tax. And Forest Service has too damn much money now. I don't see why they need money for us to walk in the woods. Anyway, if you want further information about the recreational fee demonstration protest day, August 14th, try calling Scott at 541-385-5261. That's 541-385-5261. Or send your email to ssilver@wildwilderness.org. That's S-S-I-L-V-E-R. At wildwilderness, all one word, .org. Let's run down some upcoming events here. The Rainforest Action Chautauqua is August 18th through the 23rd. The Chautauqua Council, Earth Culture, and the Rainforest Action Network are hosting the 11th annual Rainforest Action Chautauqua at the Camp Carolina Backcountry, located in Brevard, North Carolina. It's part of the grassroots rainforest protection movement in the heart of the Blue Ridge Mountains. We'll include all kinds of stuff. There is a modest cost on a sliding scale, but that includes food, camping, and cabin accommodations, of course, at the top end, and some workshop costs. You might get a scholarship if you apply and are needy. And for more information and for registration, contact the Rainforest Action Network at 415-398-4404. That's 415-398-4404. Or send email to rags, R-A-G-S, at ran.org. Once again, that's the Rainforest Action Chautauqua in Brevard, North Carolina, August 18th through the 23rd. Email to rags at ran.org. And the East Siskiyou Natural History Field Camp is coming up at the end of August, August 29th through September 4th. Sounds like a great time. The Dakuba Tebe Environmental Education Programs, Headwaters, and Antioch University will be sponsoring a 5-credit natural history science course on the Trillium Farm Dakuba Tebe Wilderness. Registration is $150 for 6 days. Or $35 a day. You can get academic credit for more. For more information about the Natural History Field Camp, contact Antioch University, P.O. Box 1377, Ashland, Oregon, 97520. Once again, that's Antioch University, P.O. Box 1377, Ashland, Oregon, 97520. Or send your email to deep@mind.net. That's deep@mind.net. All right. And I think we'll stop right there with the announcements. All the rest of these announcements are way off in September, and I'll get to some of these announcements a little later on on a later show. Here's an announcement. Actually, it's a request from Margaret Paquette. I believe that's how you pronounce her name. She's seeking information from individuals or groups who track the harvest of non-timber forest products from national forests, particularly the Suislaw, Willamette, Gifford Pinchot National Forests in Oregon and Washington. These products are defined as any plant materials indigenous to the region, such as mushrooms, moss, lichens, fir boughs, bear grass, cascara and yew bark, salal, ferns, berries, seeds, cones, medicinals, and other botanical materials. She wants to know, is anyone monitoring or tracking any species and their rate of harvest in these areas for sustainability? I don't know myself. She wants to know if there's anybody tracking changes in the resource due to over-harvesting or improper gathering techniques, loss of habitat, spread of disease, loss of species, or loss of understory species diversity. Is anyone tracking the enforcement of Forest Service permit processes for ensuring appropriate levels on permitted harvest levels or for preventing theft of materials? Is there any group who is currently advocating for protection of any non-timber resources on the National Forest? And does anyone out there have any immediate concerns for any parts of this research? Margaret's working in collaboration with the Pacific Northwest Research Station in Portland, Oregon, on policy research for the Forest Service to recommend appropriate procedures for monitoring permit sales and management of non-timber forest products. The ultimate goal is the development of a pilot project which connects community use of non-timber products with the sustainability of the resource. The work is being supported by a grant from the Pinchot Institute for Conservation in Washington, D.C. She's looking for testimony, quantitative data, immediate concerns, and recommendations. You can contact Margaret Paquette at 888-753-7335. Once again, that toll-free telephone number for any information about non-timber forest products in national forests, particularly in the Northwest, 888-753-7335, or email to Margaret, M-A-R-G-A-R-E-T, at mater.com. That's Margaret at mater, mater.com. All right, let's move into action news. This is Uncle Dennis's favorite part of the show. I've got a guy giving me updates now on all known tree sits in the United States. Here it is, folks. In Washington, on Watch Mountain in the Gifford Pinchot National Forest, the tree sit started in July of 1997, and it's still active. We'll have some more information about that a little later on. In New York, apparently a Bronx tree sit, with details coming soon, started this last spring. Current status is unknown. In Minnesota, the Minnehaha Tree Village, part of Stop the Reroute. You can contact them at 612-879-8929. That's 612-879-8929. And that tree sit started in December of 1998, and it is currently under attack, and we'll have a story immediately after this rundown on tree sits. There was a tree sit in Colorado at Vail. It was up for one day. If you want more information about what's happening in Vail, try 303-545-6203. That's 303-545-6203 for Vail information. In California, there was a tree sit on near Albion on the J Road. This was a protest against Gap, the owners of Gap, who were cutting giant redwoods in Mendocino. That tree sit started in, I guess, May, and unfortunately that tree sit is down, and the tree that it was in has been cut down. For further information, 707-937-4295, 707-937-4295. Of course, in Northern California, Julia Butterfly has been up a tree called Luna for 18 months. For further information about Julia Butterfly and the Luna Tree Sit, contact Circle of Life Foundation, 707-923-9552. That's 707-923-9552. And the Gypsy Mountain Tree Village, put up by North Coast Earth Firsters, 707-825-6598. That's 707-825-6598. That tree sit started in September of last year. And it says trees not cut, not yet cut. The word I heard a month ago was that tree sit was sort of suspended for a while because nothing was going on out there. The freshwater tree sit, this is a local activist near Eureka, California, and his webpage is www.upatree.net, and you can contact Nate at upatree.net, that's N-A-T-E, and that tree sit started in October of 1998 and is still going on. In Oregon, the Right View Timber Sales Tree Sit in the Umpqua Bureau of Land Management lands. Their webpage, umpqua-watersheds.com. There's no www there. It's just umpqua-watersheds.com. That tree sit started last month, and it's active currently. In Oregon, the Winberry Tree Village in the Willamette National Forest, they are protecting 700-year-old cedar trees. You can contact them at 541-747-9116, 541-747-9116. Started in January of this year, and they're going strong. In Oregon, also the Fall Creek Tree Village in Willamette National Forest, the Red Cloud Thunder, and they're at www.ecoecho.org. That's ECOECHO.org. And that one's been going for about a year and a quarter. Started in April of 98, and they're still active, I know. And in Oregon, the Eagle Tree Village in the Willamette National Forest. Contact Cascadia Forest Alliance at 503-241-4879, 503-241-4879. They went up this year, and they have been under siege. The last word that I had from the Eagle Tree Village was that the gate had been locked. They were trying to keep people out of the woods so that the tree sitters wouldn't be supported, and that Forest Service tree climbers were in the area. Unfortunately, I don't have any further update on the Eagle Tree Village. So if you're listening to me in Oregon, send me updates about these tree sits, okay? Just little blurbs, not long stuff, just little blurbs. Here it is, the Minnehaha Report. Hi, y'all. I'm back in Babylon, immediately into the land of stress. The first thing I heard was from the first purple I saw upon getting off the train was, things are a mess. 30 people are in jail. And the first thing I saw was the front page of the paper with my beautiful friend, 17-year-old Madeline, being dragged away by slime with a dislocated hip. I think it will likely need replacement. Welcome home. On Monday, July 26th, 9 people were arrested, including Madeline, as sheriffs set up their own camp near Minnehaha Park with full barricades and bumper-to-bumper squad. Sounds familiar. People attempted to lock to equipment as contractors prepared to cut several trees, but no one had previously known the fate of. No one was successful in that, but they were all released on bail and conditional release. On Tuesday, July 27th, 29 people were arrested, including several minors and several Native elders in a mass sit-in at the intersection of Highway 55 and 46th Avenue. Police brutality ran rampant as always. They were also were released that day on bail and conditional release. On Wednesday the 28th, 4 additional people were arrested. One was an arrestee from Monday and was charged with violating his conditional release. He is currently being held without bail indefinitely. He is on a hunger and thirst strike, and the late news is he has now been released without bail. Two people were arrested as sheriffs ran their license plates and pulled up on previous charges. Last I heard, they were both still in jail with no court dates and bail at $100 to $200. A fourth person was arrested that day, attempting to cross police lines to reach equipment. She was spotted and ran, but the thugs tackled her on a set of abandoned railroad tracks, smashing her head on the ties several times. Her skull was split open. She was denied medical treatment for 5 hours. Her forehead was busted open, face swollen, possible concussion, released on bail 4 a.m. Thursday morning. Currently, there are several tree occupants scattered throughout the area, but no one has made any move toward the camp or raiding it. And last night, many of the sheriff's squads left the area, leaving a skeleton crew behind to watch over us. Folks are staying strong in spirit, though wearing out physically. This is all completely unexpected, and we are unprepared. Even the neighbors don't know about the cutting of these mostly young elm and cedar trees, and they are livid. Press coverage has been excellent, and even more community members are out there with us. Press coverages and all that kind of stuff. Help is urgently needed right now, and it's, of course, a week after this went out. You can call 612-362-3387. That's 612-362-3387. And maybe you can help folks out there. Of course, they're looking for money and food donations if you want to send stuff. Actually, it's a P.O. box. I guess you can't send in anything other than money. Make your checks out to MN Rag and send them to P.O. Box 580936, Minneapolis, Minnesota, 55458. That's P.O. Box 580936, Minneapolis, Minnesota, 55458. 5-8. All the best to those folks. Here's some more action news. California croppers return to the University of California Berkeley's Gill Tract in fulfillment of their promise to uproot Frankenfood crops that are being planted as part of what the croppers call the corporate profiteering masquerading as science through public-funded education. This following the conclusion of a $25 million U.S. research deal between University of California Berkeley and the biotechnology agrochemical pharmaceutical giant Novartis. And in two separate actions, activists destroyed acres of genetically engineered crops. The action is taken to send a solidarity message to the organic farmers around the world who are resisting genetic engineered crops. In particular, the activists wish to support the millions of Indian farmers who are leading by example with Operation Cremate Monsanto, and the English activists who started Genentech Snowball Campaign and the Lincolnshire Loppers, whose action have shown the efficacy of massive direct action. In more United Kingdom action news, starts out, today's vandal will be tomorrow's hero. There are times when breaking the law and risking prison is the right thing to do. That was by Lord Melchett, Executive Director of Greenpeace UK. On Monday, the July 30th, I don't know the date. Monday, could have been this Monday, could have been last Monday, 30 Greenpeace volunteers chose to risk their liberty in an attempt to prevent the inevitable and irreversible pollution of our agriculture by genetically modified crops. A week earlier, some 400 people did the same thing in a genetically modified field near Oxfordshire. And on Wednesday, a genetic snowball campaigner was sentenced for the same reason. Their decision to take this step is active citizenship of the kind Tony Blair should be promoting. At Ling in Norfolk, England, there was where the decontamination actions took place. About 130 people crammed into a village hall 3 weeks ago, almost all of them to express their sometimes angry concern at the genetic modification experiments could be carried out on their doorstep without their agreement and even without advance consultation. Unfortunately, the farmer involved did not come to the meeting, did not hear those concerns, and obviously could not respond to them. And we'll move into some animal news here. The big news of the week. In a major ruling this last Monday, federal judge William Dwyer agreed with conservationists that the Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management have failed to follow the requirements of the Northwest Forest Plan. In the Western District of Washington Court, he issued an injunction against 9 unlawful timber sales in Washington, Oregon, and California, and ordered the government to notify the court prior to awarding more than 100 timber sales that have been appealed by conservation groups. In his opinion, Judge Dwyer found that the Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management violated the law by failing to adhere to the Northwest Forest Plan, schedule surveys for more than 70 wildlife species that require special protection from logging, and failing to follow the Northwest Forest Plan requirements. To survey Western Oregon and Northern California timber sales for red tree voles, a major prey species for the northern spotted owl, these violations were triggered by directives sent to Forest Service field offices in November of 1996 by regional executives of the Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management. Judge Dwyer said these actions by federal defendants are arbitrary and contrary to the plain language of the Northwest Forest Plan. Quoting, the court agreed that the government has not kept its promise to protect wildlife in these timber sales. It's time for the administration to admit its mistakes, keep its promises to complete the required wildlife surveys, and protect the public's ancient forests, said Mike Axelin, an attorney for the Western Environmental Law Center representing a coalition of 13 groups in the lawsuit. During the last 2 years, the Forest Service and BLM approved the logging of thousands of acres of ancient forest without following the minimum requirements of the forest plan, said Doug Hyken of the Oregon Natural Resources Council. If the agencies had followed their own rules, this lawsuit would not have been necessary. More ancient forests would be standing today, more wild salmon and wildlife would be alive, and our drinking water would be clearer. In his ruling, Judge Dwyer said the Northwest Forest Plan surveys requirements are plain, clear, and unmistakable. He said, quote, far from being minor or technical violations, widespread exemptions from the survey requirements would undermine the management strategy for which the Northwest Forest Plan depends. These surveys were designed to identify and locate species. If they are not done before logging starts, plants and animals listed in the Northwest Forest Plan would face potential fatal loss of protection. The plan itself recognized the importance of the site-specific analysis. All right. Just before we get into the second half of tonight's show here on Earth First Radio, let's hear a little music by Daryl Cherney. And this is off of his CD Timber. This one's called Maxams on the Horizon.
Kilgore, Texas, was born a tailor's son. From the killing of the Indians, he learned how the West was won. His name was Charlie Hurwitz, and he terrorized the land. His killing field was Wall Street, and his gang was called Mac Sam. Mac Sam's on the horizon, an outlaw gang, a raiding company. Mac Sam's on the horizon. Ain't no one safe with Hurwitz running free. Hurwitz stole Pacific lumber, used junk bonds to get the cash, left the mighty redwood forest a pile of broken slash. Like Ben Boesky made his millions when a Maxam's deal was done. $1 billion paid with redwood blood and the workers' pension fund. Maxam's on the horizon. $10 seen in every redwood tree. Mac Sam's on the horizon. Ain't no one safe with Hurwitz running free. With the patterns of simplicity, Charlie Hurwitz took his coal from the aluminum of Kaiser to the oil of MCO. He blew $1.25 billion in the savings and loan scam. He put a guilty to insurance fraud. Where's the justice for Mac Sam? Mac Sam's on the horizon, and they're taking over everything they see. Mac Sam's on the horizon. Ain't no one safe with Hurwitz running free. Now in the mountains of Rancho Mirage, where the bighorn sheep do